You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're grinding out bicep curls or muscling the couch across the living room, crushing morning miles, or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, Smoothie King has fuel to help you maximize your workouts, own your recovery, and elevate your game. Give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs with a lineup of delicious smoothies made to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
Yeah, thanks, Mr. Ghostface. Hi, I'm one of the two hosts. I'm Mike. Looking forward to talking all things horror. A little freaked out, but yeah. And I'm joined as usual by my usual co-host.
Hello.
And that's DK. And we're joined by two very special guests, Fred.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Fred.
Awesome. And Tori.
Hey, it's Purgatory.
Purgatory and Fred Krueger, let's go. and I am Michael Myers. Yes, we're having fun with all things horror, in case you hadn't realized by now. I think we've made it pretty clear. So this is one of our regular top 10 episodes. But as it is the spooky season, we're going to do top 10 horror movies, but with a twist, because we discussed it amongst ourselves and realized that there's far too many horror movies. It's very broad of a category, so we've struggled to do a top 10. So what we're going to do is all four of us have agreed to come up with a top 20. We're just going to rattle off our number 20 to 11 fairly quickly, but they will get scored in terms of points towards the final top 10. Then it'll be a regular top 10 episode after that, as you may be used to if you've watched our Marvel or DC sort of top 10 episodes. And yeah, beyond that, I just think it's a question of personal preference and choices. I will quickly go over the rules and things. There weren't really any, effectively. I believe DK conveyed that the only rule I think I had was that the films have to have had a cinema release somewhere. It doesn't matter where and it doesn't matter how long. So, but if you have any director video or anything, if it hasn't been conveyed, that's fine. It's not the end of the world.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like, that nobody told me that.
That's fine. That's no problem at all.
I think maybe one or two of mine are straight to video. I couldn't say.
That's fair enough. Well, all right. No problem. It's horror. So a lot of it would have been like that. So as I say, I left it up to the individual to decide what they wanted to include in their list in terms of what they class as horror and things, because when I was looking through sort of top 100 horror lists through the internet, some people I know class like Jaws and Jurassic Park and The Terminator as horror movies. And all three of those would be in my top movies of all time, but I just personally didn't want to count them as horror, because I just think they're other, they either fall into other genres better, or they're just not, for me, sort of scary, or, you know, a high rated certificate enough or whatever. But that's entirely up to the individual. If you decide that you want them in your list, fine, no problem at all. I just didn't pop them into mine. And as I said, in lieu of honorable mentions, we're just going to give our numbers 20 to 11. But I do have two very quick honorable mentions that I wanted to mention before that. But does anybody else have anything?
Bitch.
Well, there are reasons. Did anybody else have anything that didn't quite make the list that they wanted to quickly shout out?
Not that I can think of right now.
Mike.
Okay, Tori, go for it.
I Drink Your Blood from 1970. I watched it for the first time earlier this year, and I think it was like a Grindhouse release, but it was like one of the best like infection horror movies I've ever seen.
Oh, wow. Mm. I've never really heard of it. I think
I've seen that one. Is that the one where they, something to do with, I don't want to give it away, so it has something to do with homemade pies?
Yeah, like meat pies.
Yeah, meat pies. Okay. Yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. I think I've seen that one.
I'm getting my Letterboxd app open. Everything's going on a watch list here.
Yeah, definitely. And if you're listening along as an audience member, it might be worth doing the same. Take a note, because you never know. You might discover something completely new that you've that you are intrigued by. So, and that's part of the fun, isn't it, when we do these lists? So, awesome. Yeah, so was that it, Tori? You just wanted to shout that one out?
Yep, that's the one that like I couldn't figure out where exactly to put it. So I was like,
That's fair enough. Well, the reason that I have two things that didn't make my list is because, as I said, I went by the sort of cinematic release and have to be movies type rule. So the first thing I want to shout out, which wouldn't count, is it's technically a TV special, and it is something called Ghost Watch from when I was, ooh, I think, 10 years old. DK, are you familiar with that?
I am.
Yeah. For our American friends, it's really weird to kind of describe because it predates any sort of postmodern Blair Witch type thing. And essentially, it was a kind of, it was marketed as if it was like an investigative, we're going to examine if ghosts are really real on this BBC One, you know, 3-hour documentary slash, you know, there's presenters in the studio and there's people out doing roving reporting and stuff. But what they didn't really tell anybody or put in very small print was that it is scripted. So if you were watching, as I was as a 10-year-old, expecting it to be like, well, ghosts aren't real, so it's going to be something like, you know, the most haunted type things and stuff that started to appear then. And in actuality, it scared the crap out of me because
it traumatized an entire generation.
Because it was scripted that this ghost Pipes was haunting this family, and it was such an effective sort of, it started off as just your average, you know, rubbish BBC documentary thing and gradually got worse and worse. There were subliminal images of the ghost, and by the very end of the special, they basically acted like the likes of Michael Parkinson, the TV presenter, and Sarah Green, who the British listeners will know, were kind of possessed by this ghost and roaming through the studio and stuff. And yeah, pretty terrifying for younger viewers. But as I said, the reason it didn't make my list was because technically it only ever aired on TV and it wasn't a movie, but it is due out on a special Blu-ray release in a few days, I think, on Halloween this year. So I personally have it on pre-order. I think it's Focus Features. I'm not sure.
I have it on pre-order too, actually.
Oh, have you?
It's on my list between 20 through 11. I love that
movie. Oh, okay, awesome. Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I love that movie. It's great.
Oh, wow.
It was so just a creative for its time. And I found that out, that it just scared the hell out of like an entire generation of people. I didn't realize that when I found out all those little factoids, I was like, what? That's like almost an updated version of like War of the Worlds kind of.
Oh, wow.
Like
what they
did. Yes. Yeah.
Like what War of the Worlds did with the radio stuff. Like, I feel like Ghost Watch exactly did that. You explained it very well. It's such a kick-ass movie, dude. And I don't know. I'm not familiar with British TV or newscasters. So when I watched it, it didn't really affect me like as hard as it would as people like you, you know, grew up there and you knew who Sarah Green was and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, that was the effective kids TV for us.
Yeah. But that was the thing. They didn't use actors or anything. That's why they kind of fooled people, because they claimed it was always marketed as part of this season, but I swear it wasn't, of like fictional things. But
because it was, I think it was a spoof. Sorry to cut you out. I think it was a spoof on a show like called Crime Watch or something like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, using like actual sort of television hosts, and instead of like actors or anything, and terrifying. Anyway, I'll move us on from that. But if you're interested, as I say, do look up the Blu-ray. And clearly we have at least two other fans in here.
It's definitely on my watch list now.
If you can find it, it's definitely worth a look. But it's long and it does the kind of slow, tense build-up, so it doesn't start out like immediate, you know, horror, if you know what I mean. It starts out very, like, this is just a 1990 BBC, you know, roving documentary, and gradually ramps it up to the end. So, yeah, it works, though. My other honourable mention was just another thing that didn't actually get a cinema release, so I didn't make it into my personal list. But I've mentioned this to DK before, and it was a movie that was a Shudder exclusive. So it's available on streaming if you happen to have Shudder or get a sort of free subscription for 7 days, whatever the free trial is. And it's a movie just called Host, which came out in 2020. It was at the height of... Oh, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Ah, awesome. I'm so glad that's not just me. But yeah, it was made at the height of the sort of COVID lockdown and everything in 2020. And it's very imaginative because it basically takes place almost entirely on a Zoom call. Where, you know, that's how we were all communicating and stuff back then. And it's just under an hour, so it's not that long. It's made on a budget that would make a shoestring laugh and point for being poor. But it is so effective with what it does, and it is the scariest movie, potentially, that I have ever seen. And I was thrilled to discover, as DK knows, that you can actually buy it on Blu-ray for $9.99 on Amazon and such, because I thought with it being a streaming exclusive, there was no way that you'd be able to, but you can. And it actually has some really good special features to make up for the fact that it's a relatively short movie. So, again, look for the movie Host from 2020, and it's just incredible. So,
yeah, I love that one, bro. Me.
Sorry, what was that, Tori?
It actually scared me a little bit.
It scared me, seriously.
Yeah, I saw it in the morning, like when it first came out, and I remember just having like anxiety. I was like, what the hell movie is this?
I watched it at work.
Oh, man.
Wow. I think I watched it like 8 o'clock in the evening, but it was still like I wasn't expecting much from it. And then what they achieve with the budget in terms of special effects and tension, it's just incredible. Just fantastic filmmaking. So if you haven't seen it, which again, 3 out of 4 of us have, so there you go.
I got one of my, like, I always say this, and I learned this phrase from that movie. I always say happy spookies because they say it in that movie. And since that movie came out, I've always just took that phrase. I'm like, I always just say it now, like happy spookies.
Happy spooky.
I didn't realize it was from that.
Yeah, then when they're all doing the cheers, they're like all cheering on. They're like, what are we going to cheers to? And then Emma's like, happy spookies? And everybody's like, happy spookies.
Okay, I remember now.
Yeah, that's where I got that. That's where I got that from.
Awesome. DK, it's going to have to go on your watch list now, buddy.
It's already there, mate. I've done it while you were talking.
Awesome. Fair enough. Well, yeah, just to sort of, I presume there's no more sort of honorable mentions. We're just going to get into the lists, yeah?
Yeah, let's go.
Cool. Well, just to fill the audience in, again, please don't glaze over. This is just explanation for you in terms of how I come up with the final top 10 list. It will still be a top 10, but as we're doing top 20s personally, all of the movies that get picked will be allocated a score depending on where they are in each person's list. So a movie that gets named as somebody's number 20 would get 1 point, number 19 would get 2, right the way up to their number 1 movie, which would get 20 points. And then at the end of it, I... vamp for a little bit while I add up as many numbers as I can and try to come up with an actual final top 10 list based on all 4 of our lists, and hope that there's enough in common that we come up with that and it's not all just completely different movies. But so without any further ado, then, as I said, if we just go through 20 to 11 one at a time, and why don't we start with you, Tori, because we'll start with our guests. And did you want to tell us what your 20 to 11 are, with appropriate stops so that I can write down which scores they get?
Yeah, sure. So I just pause as I go?
Yes, please. Yeah. Or just if you want to just give like a sentence or two explanation as to why it's in your top 20 or, yeah, anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. Starting with 20, I have The Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, 1986.
Wow, okay.
And I love the mixture of comedy and horror in that, and Bill Moseley is just phenomenal.
Yeah, awesome. Is that the one with Dennis Hopper in, yeah?
It is, yeah.
Or am I? I was going to say, because I'm... Or is that the third one? Oh, no, that's Dennis Hopper. Then the third one has, like, Renée Zellweger and Matthew McConaughey, and it randomly doesn't...
I haven't seen that.
Oh, is that 4? I just know that's the weirdest franchise.
That's
weirdest
the next
franchise.
Generation.
Awesome.
Actually, I don't know why, but I love that movie.
Well, everybody has things they love. It's no judgment here, put it that way. So definitely. So what was your, yeah, if you want to carry on, what was your number 19?
Battle Royale 2001, which is a Japanese horror film.
Ooh. I know Battle Royale. Ooh, yeah,
that's a good one.
Good movie.
Yep. I was just blown away by it.
Awesome.
So I saw that on bootleg the first time.
Me too.
Yeah, at a friend's house. They just busted it out, and I was like, so we were smoking, and I was like, what is this? It scared the hell out of me.
Oh, it's definitely hardcore. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, and, if the audience aren't aware, think The Hunger Games, but like ramped up to a million.
So, with eighth graders.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Have you guys ever read the manga?
No, I did not.
No.
I read the novel came out before the movie.
If you read the manga, it turns the gore up to about 12.
Jay,
love that,
dude.
Cool. Yeah, well, I've got 1 point for Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, 2 for Battle Royale, so...
Yay! Evil Dead 2, 1987.
Oh, you might be hearing about that later from me.
It's just like, I don't know, it's weird because it seems like it's like kind of like a remake, but not of the original. But I love again, the mixture of like comedy and horror. And I don't know. I love like, you know, the black blood and just the way like the gore looks in it. It's just amazing.
Yeah, Sam Raimi again was just such a good filmmaker in terms of doing very little with no budget, or doing a lot, sorry, with very little money, I should say, and yeah, stretching that budget. Awesome. So that's 3 points for Evil Dead 2.
17, Sleepaway Camp, 1983.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Oh, it's so good. I highly recommend it.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a good one. There's...
So why should we watch Sleepaway Camp quickly then?
It's different, let's just say that. And it's got a hell of a twist. I don't want to say too much to spoil it, but it's not gory, but it's probably one of my favorite slasher films of the 80s. And you like when you get to the twist, I'm just going to say without spoiling it, you won't see it coming.
Nice. I like to hear that. Awesome. Cool. Well, that gets 4 points, so that's cool. Sweet.
And Child's Play, 1988.
Oh wow, that's a good one. I know Child's Play pretty well. Guessing you don't mean the abysmal Mark Hamill robot remake from a couple of years.
I have never seen that. Like,
what? I like the remake. Okay, whatever. I feel attacked.
That's fine. I joke, but that's absolutely.
I know my brother likes it. I'm totally just messing with you.
Yeah, my brother liked that one as well. It was just such a weird choice for me that it replaced like demonic possession with. It's like a rogue AI Terminator style. I was like, this is a weird choice, but okay. Sweet.
I heard about that and I was like, that's kind of weird because I'm just used to it being a possessed doll. It's like, yeah. But like, yeah. I'll like give it a try eventually.
I'll give you this. Aubrey Plaza is great in it, as she always is. But playing a mum, which is just, yeah, she's surely not old enough to be a mother. Anyway.
I loved her in Parks and Rec, though.
Oh, yes, definitely. Awesome. So yeah, any particular reason for Child's Play or just the obvious?
Just the obvious. You know, I love Chucky. What's ironic, actually, is I actually watched Bride of Chucky before I've watched any of the Chucky movies, so I was like kind of confused. But when I watched,
well.
I was like, why does he have stitches there? And then like I watched Child's Play 1988 and I was like, okay, this makes sense.
I did the same thing. I watched Bride of Chucky, then Seed of Chucky, then went back and watched Child's Play.
Oh, yeah, that's...
That was a trip.
That must be confusing.
My fiance gets on so me ridiculous. All the time for doing shit like that.
Yeah. Well, we saw them all. Awesome. Right, so which number are we at then? 1, 2, 3.
15, I believe, right?
5 points for Child's Play. So,
yeah, and
number 15, indeed. Sorry.
I don't know how you guys are going to feel about this, but Halloween Kills.
I love it, and I'm really glad it's on somebody's list. Thank you.
Right on, man.
I flipping love that movie. It is literally, when it came out, I think I was the only person that praised it. All of my friends said I was crazy. I made a list of ranking all the Halloween films, and it was like third.
That's where it is on mine, too.
Yeah, exactly. Behind Halloween 78 and the original Halloween 2, in my case.
I love how they brought in all the original characters.
Yeah.
It was just like complete nostalgia for me. I was like, because Halloween was one of the first horror movies I ever saw, and I was like, oh my god, they, you know, brought back Sheriff Brackett, they, it was just phenomenal. Tommy, everyone, I was just like, it was, sorry, I had to geek out a little bit.
Definitely the ending as well that got me. I just remember being absolutely, without spoiling it, I just remember being absolutely shocked and having to like sit and watch the credits for a couple of minutes with just pure like, what just happened at the very end of that movie. So it,
they actually had an alternate ending too.
Yeah, I've seen it listed on the Blu-ray, but I've never got around to watching it yet.
It's better, I think.
Really? Oh, I don't know. I love the ending that's there. So maybe we'll see. I'm sorry, I'm talking over you here. What was your number 14 then, carrying on?
Friday the 13th, part 4, 1984.
Oh, now remind me, which one is part 4?
That is, God, I'm drawing a blank. You know what? It's one of my favorite movies. And it's not an, sorry,
that's
guys.
The one with
Corey Feldman.
Yeah, yes. Corey Feldman.
The final chapter. I don't know why I was drawing a blank. I've seen it a million times.
They all kind of bleed together for me, the sequels to Friday. Yeah, that it's just a question of just pick up on one kill and be like, oh, yeah, okay, I remember now. Or is it the one with the sort of guy who takes over for Jason and doesn't or whatever?
It starts the Tommy Jarvis saga, actually.
Got you. Yeah.
Yeah, and that one's part 5, actually, I believe. But I actually really love part 5, too.
Me too.
That's the new blood, right, isn't it?
Yeah.
A lot of people hate part 5, but I love it.
Part 5 is just so filthy, dude. I don't know. It has such a high body count. Watch that movie again, and it is a very, like, just dirty, filthy movie. Like, I don't know how else it's, I don't know, it's just raunchy, hard 80s, drugs in it, tits, like, everything you expect, but it's just so ramped up in that. I don't know. It's
one of the highest kill counts, for sure.
Yeah, I think it does.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Somebody did a video once of, like, all of the kill counts across the Jason movies, and it was ridiculous. It was in the hundreds, I think. It's not on my list, but I just love Jason X as well, so shout out to that movie, which I know is trash, but I just love it anyway.
I like
Jason X. It's fun.
Thank you. DK hasn't seen that either, and I tried to sell him on it by telling him the synopsis and was like, imagine Jason finally getting killed, but then being resurrected by nanobots as a cyborg.
Yeah,
that's all you need to know.
I was like, ridiculous. Oh shit, man, I'm all over that.
It's so ridiculous.
So good. And then he has to get into a karate fight with the chick from Andromeda. So what's not to love?
And there's a Cronenberg freaking cameo at the very beginning.
Yeah, of course there is. I always forget that, yeah. Oh man, love that movie. Anyway, sorry, Tori, to
interrupt. 13 Fright Night 1985.
Oh yeah, that's good.
I was obsessed with that movie when I was younger. Like, I watched it over and over again. My brother had the DVD and I just wore it completely out, like scratches all over it. I really like the Evil Ed character. I had a big crush on it when I was younger for some reason. I don't know why.
That's something to bring up with your therapist, maybe.
It's so funny, Brewster.
Back now, yeah. But I just love how it, like, mirrors Hammer Horror, and I'm a big fan of Hammer Horror movies, yeah. And you can tell that they took inspiration from Hammer Horror.
Mm, for sure. Did you ever see the remake, by the way? Is it David Tennant and Anton Yelchin, etc.?
Yeah, I actually revisited that for the first time, and, like, I wasn't a big fan of it.
Mm. I don't know if it's as good, personally. Yeah, it's one of those things. Remakes rarely are, but okay, cool. Yeah. So what's your next one then? Sorry.
The Black Phone 2022 or 2021.
Oh, wow. Already from this year. Yeah. Wow.
I think I watched it, like, 12 times since it came out.
Wow. I haven't seen it, and it's on one of our audiences' list as well.
It's a fantastic film, man.
Yeah, it is really good.
Sell it to me in one sentence, Tori.
I was not expecting to love it as much as I did. Like, it was just so engaging and scary as crap.
Oh, cool.
And it kind of reminds me of, like, John Wayne Gacy a little bit. I know the character's different, but, like, I guess, like, the overall, like, you know, what he did and everything kind of, like, reminded me of, like, John Wayne Gacy.
The trailers didn't really give me any of those vibes, but it's definitely on my list now. That sounds very interesting. So, awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's great.
Cool. And finally for now, what was your number 11 then?
Dawn of the Dead, 1978.
Oh, thank you. Even though 2004 is fine, but yes, that's also going to be coming up from me later. So.
I love that movie. I don't even care how long it is. It's just so good.
It's incredible. I'm going to talk about it later, so I'm not just stepping on you because it's going to come up again, I assure you.
Yay!
But yeah, I love it as well. Absolutely. George Romero, Tom Savini doing the effects. And
he's even in the film too.
And he's in it, yeah, of course. And yeah, you got to love a bit of social satire, but I'll talk about that later. Awesome. Right, that's cool. So that covers Tories 20 to 11, and I've marked them accordingly for points. Fred, did you want to give us your list quickly? 20 to
11? Yeah, sure. All right, so we're going down from 20 to 11, correct?
That's right, please, yeah.
Just double-checking, and okay, so here we go. So my number 20 is actually going to be Halloween H2O, and that's and this was actually my first Halloween movie I ever saw as a kid. I believe I saw this one in theaters with some people. And okay. I didn't really know anything about Michael Myers or anything like that. So, like, when I first watched this movie, because I know they retconned a lot of stuff. They just got rid of a lot of the stuff. So I didn't really know anything about that. But when I first saw this movie, I just thought it was fucking so scary and just creepy. And I remember seeing it in theaters, just like, oh, man, this guy's with the white mask and LL Cool J's in this. At the time, I used to listen to a lot of hip-hop and stuff. So I was like, heck yeah, dude.
That movie is the 90s in film form as well.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a movie that I can easily just revisit anytime. Like, I have no issues watching Halloween H2O over.
Awesome. Sure.
I actually love Halloween H2O.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's fun. No offense if anybody's a fan, but it's 10 times better than Halloween Resurrection.
I'm not a big fan of that one.
Yeah, it kind of went off the rails a bit.
Yeah, big time. I mean, I know I said the whole thing about hip hop, but I really disliked Resurrection. And not because of Busta Rhymes, don't get me wrong.
Busta Rhymes again just deciding that he's going to call out Michael Myers and then do some kung fu fighting on him.
That part was funny when he was talking crap to Michael Myers. I'll give it that. That was hilarious.
And then Michael just like walks away, like listens to him and just walks away. Like, what is this? No.
Oh, man. Katie Sackhoff was in that movie and she's thoroughly ashamed of herself, as she should be.
That model, then Tyra Banks, she's in that too.
Tyra Banks.
Mm-hmm. That was popping early 2000s or whatever that was. That was popping, dude.
Definitely. Like, it does feel a bit like that. Like, they were kind of like, who's the biggest celebrities we can just shove in this?
They were like integrating like technology with like a like kind of like the computers, the webcams, people could interact was reality with them TV. On the chat room. Like, you could tell that they could tell the people, oh, go upstairs. It was cool. It wasn't cool. It was kind of like,
yeah, you can tell it was a studio exec that was like, what's hot right now?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I really meant. Yeah.
It was interesting.
But no, H2O is very, very good, even despite sort of the retcons and stuff it beforehand and afterwards. I think it's a good
little movie. Steve Miner directed this, which I think he directed a couple of the Friday the 13th movies too.
That kind of figures. That's cool. Well, I've knocked a point down there then for Halloween H2O. What's your number 19?
All right, this is actually a Shudder movie that came out in 2018 that I recently watched called Summer of 84. I don't know if you guys seen that, but it's just about like these four kids that stumble onto a serial killer in their neighborhood. That's all I really want to say to that, because it was such a it was so phenomenal. It's set in the 80s, so the music, it has a lot of synthesizer music. The group of friends, you just really connect with them. They don't all have perfect lives, so you can really connect with some of them. Each one is like kind of has like a shitty life or something kind of shitty in their life. And again, you have this whole serial killer aspect, and it's a very heartbreaking movie, I'll say that.
I definitely related to the punk kid.
Yeah, his family and stuff like that. It's great, dude. It definitely recommend this one.
Awesome. Oh, it's gone on the list.
Yeah, I love the anything that's kind of not in the 80s but set then, because I loved the American Horror Story 1984 series, because I just
I'm
a sucker for that. Oh, that's a good one.
Nostalgic slasher stuff. Technically, it's a TV show, but I'm mentioning it because why not?
Oh, this is right up your alley, dude. You'll definitely like this.
As soon as you mentioned that it was kind of, it wasn't made in the 80s, but set then, I'm like, right, on the list.
No. It's like Stranger Things, but like an R-rated version with like a serial killer aspect.
That sounds awesome. Cool. Okay, carry on. Yeah, what was your next one?
All right. I don't know how anybody's going to feel about this one, but my number 18 is actually the remake of Friday the 13th.
Well,
Yeah, I really, really enjoy this one. And it's probably up there in my top like five of all of them.
I need to revisit that one.
But it's just, I don't know. This was 2009, and it just has that sort of like just gore that around that time it had. I think Michael Bay might have even produced this one, and it's got. It just kind of mixes a lot of the different storylines, which I kind of enjoyed too. I'm a fan of some remakes. I don't know. There's some I hate, but this is definitely one that I watched a second time recently, and I just had a lot more appreciation for the remake.
That's cool. I remember liking that it kind of merged a few sequels into the thing as well.
Yeah, they have aspects of like part four. They have aspects of part three. They like kind of like the introduction is like parts one and three kind of. And I don't know. It's solid in my opinion. It's got great kills and. It's got everything a slasher should have. I don't know. And it's just updated.
I just think of it as Jason versus the CW because the two main stars are, is it Jared Padalecki?
Jared Padalecki's in that one.
And Danielle Panabaker from The Flash.
And then what's funny is the remake of My Bloody Valentine has Jensen Ackles.
Yeah. The remake of Nightmare on Elm Street has Katie Cassidy.
Yeah, that's true. And then the remake of House of Wax has Jared Padalecki as well. Awesome. Oh, man. But yeah, I don't know. The 2009 remake of Friday the 13th for me is just absolutely solid. I definitely tell people to give it a chance.
So 3 points. Absolutely. Yeah, I like it. I've got it. So.
All right, so we're going to move on to number 17.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please.
This is actually was on your honorable mention. It was Ghostwatch.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, like everything you said was just perfect. I remember watching this. I didn't watch it as a kid. I watched it within the last like 5 or so years. And this is a movie I would actually put under found footage movies, to be honest.
Of content.
This is like a mockumentary, which is like an offshoot of found footage. But I remember watching this and just being so engaged in the story. Like you said, the very beginning, it's just like a normal, it's like on Halloween night, they're this like news crew is investigating this house that has like a shady past. And as the night goes on, you just find out more stuff about the house, the Mr. Pipes dude or whatever, all the stuff. And then at the end, it just gets so chaotic and so insane.
Yep.
And the fact that people thought this was real.
Yeah. Watching that at 10 years old thinking it was real.
That's insane, dude. Yeah, I've tweeted about this movie a few times, and like some people have told me, like, oh, I saw this when it aired, and it just scared the hell out of me.
Oh, there were full-on complaints and, like, discussed in Parliament and stuff about... about tricking people, as it were, but yeah, so good. I mean, it was...
School was interesting the day after.
I bet. Awesome. I'm so glad that it made it over to you guys and that it actually translates to a US audience, because I was a little bit concerned it would be like, well, I don't know who these people are or what's going on, but...
And I didn't, but that still didn't take me away from how good the movie was. You know what I mean? And I think I'm pretty sure I got a pre-order of the Blu-ray too.
Yeah, I definitely have. It's 25 quid, which is relatively expensive, but it looks worth it. It's got the full on.
It was on sale when I got it. I don't know. It was like 20 bucks for me.
Oh, wow.
I saw it on the sale, and I was like, oh, I'm grabbing that.
Awesome. Cool. So what's your next one?
All right. So number 16 is actually going to be Clive Barker's Hellraiser.
I watched that yesterday.
Yeah, I just watched all 10. I just did a video and ranked all 10 movies and then watched a new one. But yeah, that first one is just absolutely gold, dude. There's nothing like it. There's like nothing before it or after. It's just so... It's just pure no-nonsense horror, dude. Like, and it's got this hardcore like family drama element, what I just absolutely love. And the Cenobites are just like second to. You have like all the stuff with like the main going on with the family that's just so hardcore.
It's iconic.
DK knows that I haven't actually seen it, so because it's just,
oh really?
I'm always put off as just like it's a little bit too extreme and. I grew up watching the little clips and stuff and thinking, oh, okay, too far. So maybe I will eventually, but yeah, it's still fresh, I think.
it's something else, man. Especially the very first one, it's very just like hard. I wouldn't say it's hardcore, but it's just no bullshit horror. Like it's just it's got the story about a family and like you know just cheating, betrayal, love, stuff like that. I think you got the Cenobites on top of everything else.
Awesome. It's on the list. I mean, I was going to watch the remake and then go back, but I think I've seen half of one of the sequels just because it was on YouTube one day and I was enjoying it. So,
that's cool. So they get so random. A lot of the movies, actually, the original scripts weren't even like written for Hellraiser movies later on.
No.
They were just random scripts pulled off the shell, rewritten to put Pinhead in there.
I watched some of those for the first time like a few months ago, and I could see that.
Yeah, like parts like 5 through 8 or so.
Like Inferno and on up.
Hellseeker, Deader.
See, I like those. I think I think they get a lot of they get a lot of hate, and I think they're fairly decent movies. Especially, I think it was Inferno and Hellseeker. I like those two.
Yeah, Inferno probably was my second up until the remake came out. Now Inferno might be my third, but Inferno was actually decent. It wasn't a bad movie.
It's kind of scary.
Yeah,
I know nothing. Even though I've not seen a full movie all the way through, I will say that Doug Bradley. Pinhead is from my neck of the woods, and I have met him more than once. So.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. Nice one.
He used to come to our university all the time because he's just a nice guy, and he used to just come around for chats and stuff. So
I've met Clive.
Awesome.
Have you?
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Awesome. Yeah.
I've never met Clive Barker. Yeah.
I think it was not long after Hellraiser 3 came out, and I met him straight, weirdly enough, in a bookshop in Leeds. And I looked like a complete fanboy because I was wearing a Hellraiser 3 shirt. and he was like, "I really like your shirt," and I thought, "Oh," and I was like, "Oh, thank you," and smiling, and inside I'm going, just die.
He was like, "I really like your shirt." Security, get that. Yeah.
Awesome. There's another one.
Awesome. So what's your next one there, Fred?
All right, so this will be number 15 is a Japanese found footage movie called Noroi the Curse. It came out in 2005. I don't know if anybody's familiar with this one.
I surprised because I love J-horror. Noroi, the Curse.
Yeah, the director is this guy named Koji Shirayoshi. I don't know if I said that right, but he is just like I don't know if you're familiar with found footage directors, but I would consider him like top tier with Eduardo Sanchez, you know, the guy that made Blair Witch.
Yeah.
But like he's got so many hits under his belt, this guy right here. But this is, in my opinion, his, like, what do they call it? Like magnum opus or whatever, like his best movie, in my opinion. But it's all about this paranormal researcher doing a documentary called The Curse, who ends up, his house just one day like burns down, and his body is never found, and all we have are these tapes, and we're just going through like what exactly happened. It's a little intricate, it's a little like kind of confusing to keep up. You have to really pay attention, but honestly, it's one of the most unsettling horror found footage movies I've ever seen. Just some of the imagery is just so creepy. There's like a lot of like the sound designs. You hear a lot of like screaming, crying babies, things like that. It's very just eerie.
Awesome. Oh, I'm going to be talking about at least one Japanese horror later, but I will mention, I think, the others that I've seen probably as well. But yeah, I can't believe that one just completely.
Yeah, it's on Shudder. It should be on Shudder right now if you have it.
Awesome. It's definitely going on the list. 100% love J horror. Right, so what was next on your list anyway?
All
right,
this is actually number 14. It's going to be Scream. Came out in 1996, dude. Ooh, one of the first. Yeah, I remember seeing this on VHS. Like, I think we got it rented or something. And it just freaked me out because it just felt like something so plausible. You know, something completely could happen. Somebody's just going crazy. And then all the movie references, I did not understand until later on. Because I was a kid, I never watched Halloween, all that stuff. So when I rewatched this as like a like maybe 18s, 20s or something, it hit so much better.
So what was your next? Sorry.
No, you're fine. This is actually 2006 Silent Hill, dude. I absolutely love this movie.
Oh,
it's what?
Ready? I love you.
Oh, okay, I thought that was a bad. I thought you liked it.
Actually,
this again. A lot of these movies I kind of based on either like childhood experiences or movies that I could easily just have no issue rewatching. And Silent Hill 2006 is just so damn good to me. Just I didn't play the video games, but I saw my buddy did a whole playthrough for me, so I just watched him do it. So I only knew from the movie, but just the movie just captivated me so much. It was so eerie. You have like this lady looking for her daughter. They're like driving and they end up crashing, and there's this whole foggy town. You have the sirens, all the, just the, like the imagery of the pyramid head, everything, man. When my friend did a playthrough, he explained a lot of stuff, and I was like, okay, that does make sense and things.
Yeah. Awesome.
It had a great music score.
Yeah.
I do remember that.
It's pretty much ripped from the games.
Oh, really? I've never played the games either.
Yeah. They've I don't know how they got away with it copyright-wise, because they attributed the score to someone else, but the majority of the tracks on that film have just been ripped straight from Akira Yamaoka's score from the games.
Oh, that's interesting.
Cool. Cool. Okay, so that got 8 points. So what was your next one there, Fred?
All right, so this is number 12. Now, this one is a found footage movie. I'm not sure if you heard about it. It came out in 2020 called Murder, Death, Koreatown. And it's very hard to come by now because I think it was pulled off Amazon. And this it became kind of controversial, I guess. But it's all about this unemployed dude who ends up investigating these murders in his neighborhood. Now, this is very exploitive because, one, the murders are actual murders. Like you could look it up and everything in his city. He was exploiting these murders. He was exploiting like homeless people to like be in his movie that obviously had like mental like issues and stuff. So it's kind of controversial, but it's very like, just, I don't know how to explain it. Very, I guess you would say Lovecraftian in a sense, almost eerie. And it has this guy investigating these murders to the point where he becomes so obsessed, and it has to do with this cult, and he just dives into like this rabbit hole of fucking like, oh, sorry to curse, this rabbit. Okay, he dives into this rabbit hole of like just conspiracy and madness, and that's all. If you ever get a chance to like come across it, I recommend it if you're into found footage movies.
So, what was your final one for now, Fred?
Oh, okay. It's gonna be John Carpenter's The Fog.
Oh, good choice.
Yeah, just a great ghost movie. You could just put on anytime, just watch. I love the beginning with the ghost story. The cinematography, Dean Cudney did it all. It just looks absolutely beautiful. Adrian Barbeau, Tom Atkins is in the movie, Jamie Lee Curtis, just great cast. John Carpenter does a quick cameo.
I only saw that for the first time last week.
Really?
Right. Yeah, on, I was
just going to say that.
Blown away.
Yeah, I love it. Absolutely love that movie.
It's definitely a comfort movie for sure.
Mm-hmm.
That's a weird thing to say about a horror movie.
I find a lot of comfort in horror movies, yeah, to be honest. Definitely.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I can't think of it. I love saying that. Maybe one or two. I wouldn't say which because they'll probably be on my list. But yeah, so that was interesting because there's nothing from mine or Tori's list in your number 20 to 11, I noticed. Which is a great sign for trying to come up with a top 10 later, but we'll see. Awesome. Thanks for that, Fred.
Yeah, no problem.
That covers that for now. And DK, do you want to go next?
Yeah, sure. I'm going to preface my 2211 by saying this was by far the most difficult, and I've had to be brutal. If not, I guarantee a good quarter of this list will be taken up with John Carpenter movies. So in order to be fair, I've had to nominate just one for my countdown, but I consider it a watermark alongside which any of his horror movies could stand. So when it does show up, know that they don't just stand for that title alone, but all the classic Carpenter flicks.
Awesome.
But even with that in mind, my choices might be a little pedestrian compared to everyone else's here, but I've got to go with movies that mean a lot to me personally. So
you haven't heard my list yet.
So for number 20, I'm going to start with 2009's Orphan.
Okay.
It's a good one.
Wow, I just recently watched that this year.
Yeah, Isabelle Fuhrman is just amazing in that. And the twist, whoa.
I know that First Kill is doing a number still at the box office as we speak. So interesting.
I agree with you. I was completely blown away by Orphan. Like, I think I did a video on it, but I was just, after watching, I was like, holy, well, thank you.
Yeah.
After watching, I was just like, wow, I remember when it came out, just kind of brushing it off. And then I watched and I was like, wow.
Yeah. I did a similar thing and I just thought, oh, it just looks like a regular run of the mill type slasher thing. And I didn't see it for a few years until after its release. And when I saw it, I was just not expecting what I watched. It was amazing. Yep.
Awesome. Cool. So what's your next one then, DK? Number 19?
Okay, next one. It's 2007's Wreck.
Ooh.
Okay. Oh, great word.
I might disappoint people, but it's probably the only found footage I've got on my list. Starts off reasonably calm, and before you know it, you're deep in oh shit territory. The funny thing is, when my parents first moved out to Barcelona, I had a PS3. I gave them a PS3 that was full of movies, and they never actually, Wreck was on it. They never watched it. And when I came over to visit them one day, while they were out of the room, I put it on. So when they came back, they actually thought it was a news report and continued to watch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, they didn't even think to question the accuracy of the subtitles. But when the shit started to hit the fan, you could have cut the atmosphere with a knife in that apartment. I shit you not. My dad still sore about that one.
That's great, dude. That's a great story right there.
So what's your next one?
Okay, the next one is 2009's Triangle.
Oh, yeah.
Again, it's another one that I passed me by originally because I just thought, oh, I've seen this kind of thing before, because from the trailers, it's very run-of-the-mill. But I watched it, and I don't want to give anything away because it would spoil it. But again, another killer twist. And, you know, by the end of it, you're trying to work it all out in your head, and you just think, oh, my God, that is amazing.
Cool.
I'm sure somebody
recommended this to me once and said it had a mind-blowing twist or something. But
that's funny. My girlfriend showed me this movie, and I thought it was great.
Oh, nice one.
I've never seen it. I'll have to watch it.
Yeah, so what's it vaguely about, just quickly, DK, then?
Basically, it's Melissa George, her and a few friends. They go out on a yacht. It's overturned by a storm, and a ship comes alongside. And in order to get rescued, they get aboard this cruise liner, and things start turning weird from that point onwards. But gotcha. But even then, it's... I'm not going to go into it, but just watch it, Mike. It's awesome.
Awesome. Yeah, cool. That's fine.
Very trippy. So,
yeah.
Nice. So, what was your next one then, DK?
Right. The next one is 1977's Eraserhead.
Cool. David Lynch.
David Lynch's?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I couldn't let this go, Mike. We aren't putting a Lynch film on here. You know what I think of the guy.
I'm surprised it was that particular one, but yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't going to be that one. But I like this one simply because it's the closest I've ever seen in movie form to what my dreams can be like. It's so surreal. It's so out there, and everybody just takes it as the norm. It's got a very oppressive atmosphere.
Hmm. Yeah, dude. I seen that movie once, and it still stuck with me. I'm like, oh, man, what the hell did I just watch?
Yeah.
I watched it for a while.
Not one of my favorite Lynches, but I prefer his non. Well, I suppose Blue Velvet is basically horror, but you know what I mean.
So, yeah.
Awesome. Cool.
Is Mulholland Drive horror?
This is the problem I had. I wanted to put that on this list, but I asked several people, and everyone I asked said, no, it's more of a thriller, less of a horror.
No.
It killed me because I really wanted to put that on this list, but Eraserhead takes its place.
That's why I wasn't super strict.
Because I mean, Mulholland Drive is... Yeah, it's probably my favorite all-time movie, Mulholland Drive. I love that shit.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's awesome.
You should have put it on if you'd liked it, because like I said, I didn't want to be super strict because I had a full-on, like, almost an entire nights-long argument with a friend of mine who swore to me that Silence of the Lambs wasn't a horror movie. And I'm like, dude, come on.
Yeah.
I consider that a horror movie for sure.
So, no, it's like a detective thriller. I was like, oh, come on. You're splitting hairs now. Cool. Fair enough. But yeah, so Eraserhead is the Lynch movie that's making your list, I presume, then?
It is, yes.
Cool. And what's next?
Right, number 16. It's following on from Fred's earlier. This one is Hellbound, Hellraiser 2.
Oh, okay. Ooh,
yeah, that's a good one.
This is the first one I saw, actually. I think the first one you see of any franchise, it kind of sticks with you.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that it took the world from the first one and expanded it. You know, showed you actually what hell was like, in essence. And I loved the whole Leviathan thing and Dr. Chenard. And
it's weird that you both have it in your choices from that franchise in the same place. Like, they both got 5 points. so you should have picked the same one, and then it would have got 10 points.
Oh well, can't be.
Again, I can't really comment because I haven't seen these movies, but. Yeah, I presume you're the expert, Fred, so what do you think of that one?
Of Hellbound 2?
It's
honestly one of the better sequels to come out in the franchise. And it kind of does what Halloween 2 does, where it kind of picks up like where the story left off from the first one. Yeah, it's a really... Plus, you have... What's her name? Claire Higgins? Or the lady that plays Julia.
Yeah.
Man, dude, she plays... I mean, she's great in the first one, but dude, she is such... Like, it just empowers this villainous role.
She is
I love the line. Yeah, I love the line where she's, you know, where she says, come on, take your best shot, Snow White.
Yeah, dude. She makes the freaking movie for sure. She is so great in that. She was great in the first one, but she just steps it up in this one.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, and what did you have next then, DK?
At number 15, I've got Jordan Peele's Us.
Ooh, okay.
That's a good one.
That's weird, because a lot of people that I've spoken to tend to think that's his weakest film today.
See, everybody loves Get Out, and I love Get Out, don't get me wrong, but this one struck a chord with me. I don't know if it's because I just find Lupita Nyong'o absolutely stunning, but I just think that it's well-written, it's well-paced, it's terrifying in some places. It's got a decent twist, even though you can kind of see the twist coming, and the soundtrack just makes it.
It's a pretty original story, too.
Yeah, and that last scene...
I think all of Jordan Peele's are, yeah.
That final scene, it had me thinking about that for days afterwards.
Okay.
I don't want to give it away, but... That's probably my... Out of the three, I'd probably put that in my third.
That's fair enough.
That's all right, though. Cool. Yeah, I'll have to watch all of the Jordan Peele's at some point. I still haven't, and there's no reason for it. I just haven't got around to it yet. Yeah, fair enough. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Nope is in one of the audience's top list as well.
Nope is such a good film.
I really enjoyed Nope. I still think Get Out was just his best so far.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, but that's, you know.
I would have watched it a third time if I could have.
I understood that reference.
I still haven't seen the movie, but I know the reference.
Anyway, that's funny.
DK, what was next?
Next one, I've got 1979's Phantasm.
Oh, I struggle to put this one on my list.
I don't know. It's cheap and it's tacky and it really shows its age now, but I just love it. It's just so batshit crazy. I couldn't leave it off the list.
I agree. It is great. It's absolutely great.
I mean, Angus Scrimm is fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
I always forget that chap's name. I always get him and the director confused. So the director is Don Coscarelli.
Coscarelli.
The actor is Angus Scrimm. Right?
And I just love the fact that one of the heroes is a balding ice cream salesman.
And why the heck not? Exactly. I just remember loving the actual murder weapon in that because it was just such a cool random idea. And I know it's basic and simplistic, but it's just kind of like, oh, wow. And the fact that the sort of DVD and Blu-ray sets you can get are actually in the whole thing.
So, I used to have that one. I wish I'd never sold that.
Phantasm is just such a, I don't know, it's such a unique movie, in my opinion.
It, very unique, yeah, yeah.
You have that boy, and it's all about, what is it, the boy stumbles onto, Angus Scrimm and his plot with the graveyard and what he's doing with the bodies.
Yeah. It does take a turn halfway through, and you just think, what?
Yeah, it's they go to a different world at some point in the movie. Like, it's so wild. It's so wild. It's so it's different. Oblivion, I think. Huh?
Was it called Oblivion or something?
The fourth one.
Yeah, I think that's the name of the fourth movie is Oblivion. Yeah. What it's called where they're at, but it's such a random movie. I don't know. It's so good though.
Cool. Awesome. So what was next then, DK? Is that got seven?
Right.
Points?
Next one, it's a classic, and I think it's a classic for good reason. I'm going with Hitchcock's Psycho.
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay.
Just Anthony Perkins is just fantastic. That such a great serial killer. I've heard that Psycho 2 is a fantastic film, but I've not seen that one.
It is a really good follow-up.
Oh, fantastic.
Okay. I haven't seen it either, and now I'm really intrigued.
No, yeah, yeah, and he comes back, too. Seasons. I think it has Anthony Perkins and Meg Tilly in it, if I recall correctly.
It does. Yeah, they're both amazing in it.
Awesome. Oh, so I'm guessing you rightly know that Psycho is just iconic, DK.
Oh, definitely. I mean, as I say, it is a classic, and it's a classic for a reason.
Oh, definitely, 100%. I mean, it wasn't the first slasher movie, but effectively, it was the first.
I just want to note that Hitchcock had balls to do what he did with Janet Leigh in that movie.
Oh, definitely.
For the first 20 minutes, and that's one of the best things about the movie, is the first 20 minutes up until that point with Janet Leigh, and then you're just like, wait, what now?
Yeah.
Then it's almost the story really kicks in. That's a great one.
That's what I like about it. I think people tend to forget that the story after the sort of big moment is, for me, just as good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And a film's good when they do a remake and it's just literally a shot-for-shot remake, so it's utterly pointless.
I don't know if I've ever saw the remake.
It literally is just the same thing. Every shot is identical with dialogues the same. It's
Gus Van Sant, isn't it?
Yeah, Gus Van Sant.
I've never been interested in watching the remake.
There's no point. Like I said, you could just watch a colorized version of the original and have the same effect. Yeah. Anyway, what was your next one then, Deacon?
Okay, my next one is kind of a horror comedy, but I love it, as you know, Mike. It's number 12 is 1988's Waxwork.
Oh, yes. Right on.
We've spoken of that a lot.
Fun movie.
Yes. It's, as Fred says, it is so much fun. It's got a really good cast, David Warner, Patrick McNee, Zach Galligan, and it's pretty much a homage to a lot of classic horror movies. And if you like crossovers, this will be right up your street. It's just fun from beginning to end. And a surprising amount of blood, which I appreciate.
It's an odd sentence to say. But
I also want to note this movie has a werewolf that gets hit with a chair and then just brushes his shoulder off like nothing.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the werewolf is John Rhys Davies.
Oh, I'm definitely sold. What a ledge.
And I find it hard to believe that I have a film in my top 20 that has Miles O'Keefe in it, but it is that good.
At any point, does werewolf John Rhys Davies just shout out, "And you have my axe"?
It's a bit before that, dude, but...
So, yeah, what was your final 10-pointer at number 11?
Just missing out on the top 10 is 1982's Creepshow.
Ooh.
Very good one.
Wasn't the Romero film that I would personally have put in there, but I am right that's Romero, yeah?
It is. Romero, Stephen King, Tom Savini, Tom Atkins, Leslie Nielsen acting the villain part.
Okay. Wow.
And Joe Hill's at the beginning. He's the little kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I only found that out the other day when we watched In Search of Darkness. I didn't know that until that point. Oh, cool. Awesome. You see, I love it just for the dancing Ed Harris sequence.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
So, yeah, DK, that was number 11, so you've got 10 points for Creepshow.
Yeah.
Again, I haven't actually seen it.
You've got to see that. It's brilliant.
Is it one of those anthology things like Twilight Zone kind of thing?
It is. It's really good. It's got Stephen King dealing with meteor shit.
Oh, my God. I remember that.
All right. Oh, well. That's cool. That's fair enough. Awesome. Well, I'll go over mine then.
I was going to say, if you've got a phobia about bugs, be very wary on the last story.
I actually have a phobia of bugs, and that bothered me for months.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just thinking about it.
Not so much general bugs, but definitely spiders. One of the most traumatic experiences of my life was watching Arachnophobia. Hated that movie.
Well, this is roaches. If you don't like roaches...
God, I hate roaches.
You got Tori there. Nice. Awesome. Cool. Again, you've picked almost like a book about, what, 7 or 8 films that nobody else has? So this list's taking weird shape already. But I'll go over my number 20 to 11 of mostly films that aren't on anyone else's list. Unless they're in the top 10, you never know. My number 20 film was the original Saw. It's the only Saw movie in the franchise that's on my list. And I do like the first two, I will say, but I do think it kind of got ridiculous after that point, to the point that now we're in like the 10th sequel or something stupid, and it's very much beating a dead horse at this point with that same old formula.
Weirdly enough, this was my number 21. It just missed out.
Oh, okay. Wow, okay. Cool. Sorry, Tori, what were you saying?
I just said I need to revisit that one. It's been so long since I've seen it.
It's a revelation, and it's quite tame in comparison to some of the others in the.
Have you seen them all?
I've seen them all, but like I said, I think it just gets more and more ridiculous as you go on. I enjoy them all for what they are. I enjoyed Jigsaw. So I haven't seen Spiral yet, actually, so I shouldn't.
I haven't seen any past the third one, except for the book of Saw Spiral one.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
I've only seen the first three, and then the Spiral one.
Isn't it around the third or fourth that they all start kind of overlapping the plot lines?
Yeah, it just gets really weird. But effectively, they're all just an exercise in how to make the most grotesque sort of challenge.
Yeah, the third one at the end, like the twist, I don't recall it, but that's where I kind of just started like, okay, this is kind of getting silly. Like, I think that they started doing that overlapping thing you're talking about.
Oh, they're all like that. Yeah. I mean, the fact that, spoiler alert, they kill off the actual main villain in the third movie, and yet there's 10 movies or something after that.
I remember him dying, John Kramer actually like officially dying in the third one, but then they started pumping them out, and I was like, what's going on? Like, what?
It's so weird. It's like he's got like 20 copycat killers or something. So again, it just gets stupid. They really should have just let it be. But I love the first two. Even though a lot of people don't like the second one, I personally like what they did with the plot and the idea of it being almost like,
dude, the second one's fun, dude. I like the second one. It's good.
I just remember Needles and that's it.
Yeah,
I like what's the cop in that? The main
Donnie Wahlberg.
Yeah, the Wahlberg dude. I like him. He's like super just angry.
I didn't know that.
And then the big twist at the end of the reveal is just kind of heartbreaking. You're like, oh, he literally just had to do what he said, and his son would have been in a safe place. Absolutely. Oh man, that's great.
I know you're not Mike. I don't know if you two guys are gamers, but the Saw game on the PlayStation was pretty damn good.
No, I didn't even know they had a Saw game, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the second one's terrible, but the first one is really good.
I had no idea.
No, but I should have specified before I start my list that, again, there's no reason for this. It was just my own personal thing that I decided that I was just going to have one film per franchise because otherwise it would get bogged down in sequels and stuff. But I will mention, like, in for example, Saw is kind of a shared Saw 1 and 2. I like them both, but if I have to pick one, it's the first one for doing what it did and kind of breaking ground like that. I tried not to have just, like I said, more than one thing per franchise. And I don't think I've got more than one or two per director, but again, there's no reason. There's no strict rule against it. It was just what I chose to do. So.
I think I have a few from a franchise.
I think I have two. Yeah, two or so. We'll see.
Fair enough. My number 19 then is, again, a very recent movie. It's Edgar Wright's Last Night in Soho, which
I never saw that.
I've been meaning to see that.
That is an amazing film. I'm kicking myself that I forgot to put it on the list.
Well, there you go. I was not expecting it to even be a horror film, and yet it's such a cool throwback to the kind of psychological horrors of the, I guess, what, 70s, 80s type era. And it's got a touch of the Italian giallo about it at times, which I also appreciate because I like them. And it's just brilliant. It's brilliantly acted. Again, brilliant surprise twists at the end, which I won't ruin. And just Edgar Wright, man, he's possibly my favorite working filmmaker yet to make a bad movie. Some casting choices are questionable, but other than that, I just love all of his stuff. But Last Night in Soho in particular, if you'd never watched it, or if you thought, because the trailers didn't really give you a lot to go off if you weren't sure based on that, give it a go, give the film a watch, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'll have to check that out sometime.
For sure, yeah, definitely. So have you seen it, Tori, at all?
No, I haven't actually. I've seen the trailer, but like you said, it didn't really give off anything. But I actually have it on my watch list on Letterboxd. I've seen it streaming on, I think, HBO Max. And like, I'm always like about to watch it, but then I always choose something else. But I definitely need to check it out because I've heard a lot of good things about it.
For sure. I think some of it might be curiously British, but then again, not anywhere near as bad as Ghost Watching Friend Love That's Who does. Awesome. Yeah, I'm glad you liked it as well, DK, actually. I've never spoken to you about this movie, but it's always good to know that there's something in common.
It were a complete surprise. I mean, me and Kelly watched it and we were both blown away by it.
Yeah, I just loved it so much. I was obsessed with the soundtrack and everything for days. But then again, I'm like that with most Edgar Wright films as well. My number 18 then is another recent movie. It is 2020's The Invisible Man, which I cannot recommend enough, but also can't really talk too much about because it would be kind of spoilery. But suffice to say, if you think you know the story, you don't. It is very timely. It's very of the time. It is, whilst I would definitely say it's a horror movie, it deals very sort of head on with the idea of mental abuse and gaslighting and such, and using the sort of the invisible man, as it were, as a nice crux to get into exploring all that. It's a stunning lead performance by Elizabeth Moss, who just, you know, if genre films got awards, it was probably Oscar worthy, in my opinion, but they don't. So unfortunately, that didn't happen. But yeah, I just remember that was my favorite movie of 2020. And I gave it like 5 stars all round and just absolutely adored it. It's so clever. It does really cool stuff. And yeah, again, a sort of twist at the end, which makes it a different movie than you were thinking, but it's so good. Yeah. I'm guessing by the silence that I'm the only one that's seen
it. No, I'm waiting for you to finish, dude. I absolutely was blown away by this movie. That's also directed by Lee Whannell, who wrote Upright Saw. And I forgot what other movie he did. Oh, Upgrade.
He did the one with the dummy, but I forget what it's called.
No, Dead Silence. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of cheesy fucking movies like that. But no, I was blown away by how great The Invisible Man was. It was a really good reimagining. It took it and like just modernized it. Such a creative way.
Because I love the original Invisible Man, so I've never seen this, but it's on my watch list. Is it like the same or different? Or
it's different. Entirely different. It's nothing like the original.
I would still say there is a mad scientist in the movie.
Oh. Yeah.
I would definitely still say it still has a mad scientist sort of in the movie, just modernized in the way with technology.
Yeah. I don't want to give too much away, but I could say you could probably make an argument that the two films are different genres. Basically,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, because what you said about the sort of gaslighting thing, that's like one of the main themes in the movie for sure, is the psychological abuse, mental abuse somebody gets put through. It out, Tori. Really great, really great to reimagine. Anybody listening, check it out.
I'm definitely putting it on my watch list.
It's so good. I can't recommend it enough. Awesome.
Agree with you on all levels.
Awesome. I don't know what it's either, and you all have. There we go. Awesome. number 17, we've already talked about. It's the original 1978 Dawn of the Dead, which isn't to say I don't like the 2004 version. It's good, but something about that original George Romero version, like I said, the Savini effects are just stunning. Night of the Living Dead's a good movie as well, but seeing them in color and how kind of, again, imaginative and gory in the sort of best way, I guess, the film got, but what really wins me over is the absolute fact that it is just a satire on corporate culture and capitalism and everything. And even I think when I first saw this, I was probably way too young to pick up on that and still did. Got the picture of like, oh, I get it. We're all zombies who march onto the mall if we have no other higher brain functions because we're so used to it. And like, I get what you're saying here. But yeah, I mean, even aside from that, the set pieces, the effects and stuff, I just absolutely love it. So yeah.
You know, I actually like it better than the 2004 one, too.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I like it more. Yeah. I don't dislike the 2004, but I still think the original is the better movie. Yeah, 100%. But it's just, it's George Romero doing zombies at the end of the day.
I'm scared of fast zombies, so.
Yeah, fast zombies don't really, there's something wrong about it, isn't it, really? But,
and I saw the remake before I ever saw the original. So for me, I enjoy the remake a little bit more than the original. Oh, okay. But of all of them, I really enjoyed Day of the Dead.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
I think
that's
Day of the Dead was a surprise because it's such a different movie. Yeah. Like, we've talked about my number 16. It's Psycho as well.
That's awesome. The original.
Again, you can't fault the little things. The musical score became rightly iconic. The absolute staging of the scenes. Hitchcock was, you know, a master director. I don't think that's a controversial view at this point. The acting, the great, as you already mentioned, Fred, the absolute balls of saying, this is our lead star, now we're going to kill her off, like, not even halfway through.
Can't imagine what that must have been like back then.
Oh, definitely. I mean, Scream does something very similar, I would say.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Was around then. That tries to repeat the trick, but it's not quite as effective as what Psycho does. And it's just really good. Like I said, it was one of those films that the first time I sat down to watch it, I was like, I bet this is going to be one of those films that has a couple of moments that have become iconic and the rest of it really isn't that good. But nope, it really is just good all the way through.
That's how it got me as well.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Can't fault Psycho. So my number 15 movie is the 1980 Stanley Kubrick, The Shining. I did think I probably had it a bit lower, and I do like the movie a lot, but it was just one of those things where I was like, because I know Stephen King doesn't like it, and because I love the book, I'm like, is it, I'm wrestling with how, and I don't really love the ending, to be fair, of the movie either, even though I know a lot of people do, but it's definitely, it deserves a place on my list for just atmosphere, And again, well-staged sequences, acting for the most part, and just, yeah. I didn't realize, I didn't know until last week that there's an extended version with like half an hour more footage than I've ever seen. And I found it available on 4K, and it has been ordered. And I now cannot wait to watch the extended
version. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so excited to see what that's going to show me. And I will say as well, since I'm talking about sequels and stuff, Dr. Sleep is another movie that was very nearly on my list. It's exceptionally good.
It's so good. And yeah. It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Good and film. I will say that's a vast improvement on the book, which I just didn't care for at all. So, yeah. Awesome. Any thoughts on those then, guys?
I'm actually very surprised at how great Dr. Sleep was. I didn't read any of the novels or anything, so I'm just basing it all off the story, but Dr. Sleep is that opener with Rose the Hat and the little girl just sets it all up for you how just dark that movie's going to be, and it really was.
That scene where they kidnap that kid,
that's very hard
to watch.
That is what gnarly, dude. It's like a bunch of crackheads like feeding.
It's and crazy. They go back to the hotel at the end. It's great.
Yeah, that was a really good part. I really enjoyed at the end too, when you have his son going back, Danny.
Yeah, I will say as well, the makeup effects job they do on Henry Thomas from E.T. to make him look exactly like Jack Nicholson from The Shining.
That's what that was?
Yeah, I was amazed. I was like, they've done CGI or something here, or they've got an actor that looks very like him. Nope.
I thought it was Henry CGI.
I've got to give him props for marrying the two versions of The Shining together and coming away with such a good sequel.
Yeah, for sure. And Mike Flanagan, again, I couldn't put them on the list because they're TV shows, but if you haven't seen The Haunting of Hill House and what's the other one based on the turning?
Bly Manor.
The Haunting of Bly Manor, yeah, that's the one. Both of those, again, outstanding 10 out of 10 stuff. Definitely.
I haven't seen Bly Manor.
I actually preferred Bly Manor to Hill House. I think I did as well.
Midnight Mass was great too.
I still haven't watched it. I've only seen eight episodes. They've also put out the Midnight Club.
I
see people talking about that. I don't even know what that is.
It's Mike Flanagan. That's all I need to know.
Yeah exactly. That's the only thing I do know is Mike Flanagan's new show.
Yeah. Awesome. Right, so my number 14 is the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1976. Again, one of those films that I like the remake fine. It's good. I own both, but the original is just something special for me. It was just one of those films you watch and you think, wow, how did they think to create this in a world that didn't have it? It's so weird and jarring at times in the best way. And again, the stuff they got away with and were not afraid to kind of push that boundary. Toby Hooper as the director was just outstanding. And like I said, for me, I think it adds an extra chill factor that it is kind of based on real crimes, because you just want to think like there's nobody this sadistic and weird. And yeah, sadly there was, you know. But yeah, I will say though, the reason it's not much higher is because the last half an hour of just the final girl just screeching directly at you for 30-odd minutes is just a lot to take. So that knocks it down a quick point. But yeah, the rest of it's so good. And what's his name? Gunnar Hansen, Leatherface. Oh, talk about doing a lot with so little. He doesn't even speak, and yet he's brilliant in that movie. So awesome.
Everything about that movie is just top-notch.
I love it. What about you, DK? Is it coming up later?
It's not coming up for me. To be honest, I'll be completely candid here. I've still never seen it.
Oh, wow. You really should. Oh, man. You definitely should. Give it a go.
It's fantastic.
I'm never going to judge anybody for having blind sides, though, because there's a lot I haven't seen, but I definitely do recommend watching it, DK. But yeah,
it's on my list.
Have a strong stomach, because it's surprising what it gets away with at times.
It could be a dirty movie for sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, completely. Especially when the whole family's together and then the girls with them. Oh, man, it just starts getting really crazy with the grandpa. Just like, oh.
So creepy though, and so just like, what is happening?
Plus, the camera angle is just like zooming in on the eyes, and just like, oh man, so unsettling.
It's like a really bad trip.
It is kind of, yeah. I will tell you this quick story that I used to work in a cinema, and one Halloween, they decided that they were going to do like an overnight horror binge for like to celebrate the Halloween season. And the four movies they put on for us to watch were Ring, the Japanese original. The original Friday the 13th, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Evil Dead. And because it was like, it started at say 10 o'clock at night and then went on till 7 in the morning. So naturally I fell asleep like partway through and I woke up to that last scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre whilst half asleep and groggy and was just like, ah, oh, this is even weirder than I remember. So yeah, freaky stuff.
Damn, that's awesome they did that at the theater though.
Oh, it was so good. We were all in fancy dress. I had my full-on Scream costume and mask, and people were dressed as Sadako and various other Michael Myers and such. It was so good. Yeah. But yeah, I don't recommend trying to think as bravely as I did. Like, I'll be up watching all these movies. It'll be no problem. And then just immediately fall asleep and miss off of at least one of them. Because, yeah, you can't do it. Your body will just give up, especially if you're sitting in a comfortable, very dark room. Awesome. My next one on my list, again, which might be a bit low for some people, is the original A Nightmare on Elm Street from 1984. I mentioned
God, to put that one.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Imaginative, brilliant effects. Wes Craven is a master. Robert Englund is Freddy Krueger. No offense to Jackie O'Haley, but it's just not the same. And I just, I'm repeating myself, but just how imaginative and crazy and the actual interpretation of dreams and some of the weird set pieces do just literally seem like nightmares. And yeah, so cool.
Man, that scene where that girl's just like being dragged up in her room, up on the walls and everything. I just rewatched the first seven movies, actually. Some of them were some of my first time watches, like pretty much from four and up, like my first time watches.
Okay. But yeah, I'm in the same boat as you because I've got the box set and I've tried to work my way through, but I also haven't seen anything after. Well, I haven't seen 4, 5, or 6, but I have seen 1 to 3, New Nightmare, right. Freddy vs. Jason and the remake. So weirdly, it's just a bizarre blind spot.
No, yeah, I'm just blowing through them. So I just finished off New Nightmare, which was way different. It was, I don't know how to feel about it. I don't know if I love it or if I don't know. It's such a different movie, but yeah, no. The first one is just absolutely great. Just so many iconic moments in that.
Yeah. New Nightmare was, it's not my favorite, but I do fully acknowledge that we wouldn't have Scream without New Nightmare, so...
Yeah, no, I definitely see, like, pre-Scream vibes with the whole, like, meta and the movie within the movie and all that.
Yeah. Cool. My number 12 has already been mentioned. It is Evil Dead 2, which I just love. I like the first two Evil Dead films, not a fan of the third, I know, controversial. And I like the remake, but for me, yeah, 2 just does... The reason it's better than 1, in my opinion, is that 2 has the absolute balls to think, let's lean into the ridiculousness, let's play up the comedy and the slapstick part instead of just going for sheer horror and terror. And I think that plays into the somewhat basic nature of the effects and stuff if we watch them with a modern eye. So it really... And it just plays up Bruce Campbell's strengths because if you have a man who's that good at sort of comedic timing and slapstick and stuff, why wouldn't you make the most of it? So, yeah, I absolutely love it. I love that it's just quirky, silly, fun, and, you know, any film which has a guy cutting off his hand and then pinning it down with the book of Farewell to Arms is just genius in my book.
So, see, and I'm one of the people that just prefer the first one over the second one. Like, I'm not too big of a fan. I don't like to I wouldn't care to rewatch the second one too much.
I can understand that if you're more into sort of serious horror. Like I said, the first one I do like a lot. And the first one is way more of a serious, like, horror movie. I can definitely see that why you would prefer that.
And I don't dislike part 2. I'm not trying to say, like, oh, I hate that movie.
No.
But it's just, like, a preference. I could rewatch the first one over the second one for sure.
Yeah, I definitely see that. And I could watch either one, but like I said, it's just a preference thing. It's Elvis and the Beatles, I think, isn't it, really? Where, you know, they're both good, but you're going to prefer one over the other, aren't you? So, awesome. And my number 11, finally, then, for now, for me, is an absolute Stone Cold classic, and it is Nosferatu.
Which
I adore because, again, I don't know if it's common knowledge about me, but I actually have a film studies degree. So I did study film at university. And when we did the sort of section on classic horror and particularly German expressionism, yes, I liked Cabinet of Dr. Caligari and all that. But then when I saw Nosferatu, I was like, this film is next level good. It's truly iconic. It's amazing how much from that movie we just know by proxy or by like filtering it through our cultural experience. It is the most atmospheric film. It has the best makeup. it's, again, it's very well acted to the point that they had to make a whole other movie later about how the actor who plays the sort of villainous lead got too into character.
In the Shadow of the Vampire, right?
Yeah, the Willem Dafoe movie, which again, good. Especially a good like watch along with Nosferatu if you happen to.
Did you like the other Nosferatu they did? I forgot. What's his name? Werner Herzog. What's his name?
It was fine, but it didn't quite have the emotional punch and the impact for me. If you know, I wouldn't say it was a bad movie by any means, but if you're gonna watch one, like I said, there was something very special about that first German F.W. Murnau version, and like I said, it's definitely the oldest film on my list because it's from 1920 something.
I really like that film too, dude. I watched it. I think within the last few years, I watched it for the first time.
It's awesome. And the use of shadows. Sorry, Tori, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I love the name Count Orlok. I was just going to say, I think it's like a lot cooler sounding than Dracula, but that just might be me.
Yeah, it is. It's a good point, but yeah. I was confused by that because I didn't realize when they first played the movie that it is just Dracula adapted for one of the first times. And I like that book as well, but then it became quite apparent that it was. And then as you say, I was just like, well, they made him look so much scarier, like the iconic Nosferatu vampire that we, again, are used to just from culture now, is so much scarier than the sexy dude with just bad teeth, you know?
Well, he's like a predator almost in Nosferatu, just like a straight predator.
I mean, it really plays with the whole he's part bat idea and ran with it, and yeah, now that's why we have
a lot. I like when he's looking at the picture of the wife, and she's like, she has a lovely neck.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
It's like, this is weird ass dude. So creepy the way he looks, dude. Just stares at him, just stares at you, and just
That's one of the things, isn't it? Because it's a silent movie, it has to do so much with little looks and kind of, like I said, playing in darkness and shadows and stuff. And absolute masterwork. Fully recommend if nobody's ever seen it. It's not even that long, so give it a watch if you can.
No, it's really not that long. I don't think less than an hour, I think.
It's like 49 minutes or something like that, but yeah, worth a look. DK, you're very quiet. Have you not seen it?
I saw it some years ago, so other than the iconic imagery where what you see plastered over it, I don't think I can really remember much of it. I really need to give this one a rewatch.
Did you picture the guys from the Fast Show when you watched it?
monster.
That, again, that's a joke purely for the British members of the audience, but yeah. Awesome. Cool.
But I will say it does refer me back to a nice little sketch in Waxwork 2 with Drew Barrymore in that for Nosferatu. So.
You're now name-checking Waxwork 2?
Yes. I have to.
Wow. Okay.
It's the only way it'll ever be mentioned in a top 10.
I wouldn't know. I didn't even know the first one existed till you mentioned it to me. And we'll leave it there for today. Come back and join us on Halloween night itself for the second and concluding part of this best top 10 horror films special. What can they expect, DK?
More horror, more weirdness, more good chat. So yeah, come back, join us.
Yes, indeed. And that will be on actual Halloween night itself. Do bear that in mind and make a note if necessary, because it's not our usual night. But yes, hopefully we will keep you entertained with all things spooky. And in the meantime, remember, in the epic words of Arnold, we'll be back.
You have been listening to the Silver Screen Podcast, hosted by Michael Wilson and DK. Created, produced, and edited by Michael Wilson. Behind the scenes sections and additional material produced by DK. Music by Timeless Journey. More information can be found at soundcloud.com/timeless journey. Follow the podcast on Twitter @podcast_screen, on Instagram @silverscreenpodcast, or look for the Silver Screen Podcast under Facebook groups. Links to all our social media accounts and more are in this episode's description. This podcast is available on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for Silver Screen, Hit or Miss Star Trek. This has been a Mike's Podcast production. Copyright 2022. Thank you for listening.